Later that day, Hardy and Akins watched through the second-story window of their hotel room, and they saw smoke following the sheriff and Hogg as they rode out of town. Hardy nodded as he peered through the binoculars in his hand.
I give Tolliver one thing.
What's that?
He knows his men. He was right about Jensen following him and Hogg and leaving us alone to do what we gotta do.
You know, if I had my rifle up here, I could end all this right now.
Now you're sounding as dumb as Hogg, kid.
Why do you say that?
Just what would you do after you shot Jensen? Walk out of the hotel with your smoking Winchester in your hand and say, "Here I am, arrest me for murder."
Nope. I'd hightail it down the stairs and out the back door. By the time the crowd started looking for the killer, I'd be on my horse and headed out of town with no one the wiser.
Bull crap, kid. Our names are on the register downstairs along with our room number. You think none of those people on the street are going to see where the shot came from?
Well, it was just a thought anyhow.
Well, you let me and Tolliver do the thinking and you'll live a lot longer.
Akins whirled around and his right hand dropped to the butt of his pistol, his eyes flashing. Hardy grinned and stepped back, his right hand also near his gun.
You sure you won't test me, kid? Man, you may be a tad faster, I don't know. But at this distance, I'll get off at least one shot and you'll eat some lead no matter who fires first.
What are we arguing for, Jeb? After all, we're on the same side here.
I'm glad you see it that way, kid. Now, let's get our mounts and head on out to the hill where we're going to ambush that train.
But we got several hours before trains even due in.
I know, kid. But I'd kind of like to look around the area before we have to take down the train. We might have to clear some brush from alongside the track where we're going to be riding. And that might take some time. Besides, it's better if the people in town don't see us riding off towards the ambush site right before the ambush occurs. All right?
Yeah, sure, Jeb. But if we're going to hang around out there in the wilds all day, you mind if I get a bottle to keep my throat from getting dry?
As long as it's a short bottle, kid. It wouldn't do to get drunk and fall off our horses when we're trying to kill somebody.
Mercifully, the little old lady across the aisle from Cal spent most of the trip knitting instead of talking. So by the time the train was nearing payday, he was sound asleep.
Well, I swear, would you look at that?
What is that? What is it?
Looky there. Those men are trying to race the train up this hill.
Race a train?
Cal leaned forward and glanced out the window across from her. Sure enough, a man with his hat pulled down low was leaning over his saddle horn and riding hell-bent for leather alongside the car as the train struggled up the incline and began to slow down.
Crap!
Cal drew his pistol and hunkered down between the seats for cover.
What did you say, young man?
Everybody get down! Now!
Cal was reaching for the old woman to drag her down with him. The lady's eyes opened wide in surprise, and a bright flower of blood blossomed on her blouse just over her right shoulder. Cal grabbed her, and her eyes rolled back. She fainted and fell into his arms. He pulled her down and laid her gently on her back on the floor under the seats. Really pissed off now, Cal raised his head and aimed out the window. He was rewarded by seeing the horse of the man on his side of the train swallow his head and somersault forward, sending the outlaw tumbling through the air to land hard in a sycamore bush. Cal quickly began to reload, but by the time he'd filled the chambers, the other bandit had pulled up his horse and was riding across the tracks to help his friend. It didn't matter anyway, as the train had reached the top of the hill and was picking up speed and would soon be at the payday stop. Cal holstered his pistol, reached down, and slid the old lady out from under the seat into the middle of the aisle. He leaned over and ripped the lady's blouse open at the shoulder.
You need any help, son?
Help me get her up on the seat. She'll be more comfortable there. We're gonna need to put some more pressure on that wound to slow the bleeding as much as possible.
They picked her up and laid her on the seat crosswise.
Sounds like you've seen a few gunshot wounds before, son.
A few, mister. So I know what we gotta do. I'll stay here with her, and as soon as the train stops, someone needs to get a wagon from payday, and we need to get her to a bed where someone can try and get that bullet out of her shoulder before it festers up.
I don't know who that'd be. I'm from payday, and our only doctor was killed a few weeks back.
I know. I guess we'll just have to find somebody else to do it.
Cal inclined his head toward the lady's handbag, which was lying next to her knitting she dropped when she got shot.
Maybe there's something in her bag that'll tell us who she is. We'll need to notify her family she's been hurt.
The man picked up the bag and opened it.
Here's a telegraph receipt. It's a message to the mayor of Payday, and it's signed Janet Rule.
Jiminy. She's got to survive. She's got some important news for the mayor, so we've got to get that bullet out of her and keep her alive.
Well, we got a sheriff here in Payday. He's had some experience with gunshot wounds. Maybe he can take the bullet out of her.
Over my dead body.
Jeb Hardy watched the train disappear in the distance and shook his head. He took his Stetson off and looked at the bullet hole punched neatly in the crown, about 1.5 inches above where his head had been. He didn't know who the yahoo was who'd started shooting back at him from the train, but he was damn good. He jerked his horse's head around and rode it across the tracks. He grinned for a moment at the sight of the very proud and self-important Kid Akins lying ass over tea kettle in a sycamore bush.
Hey, kid, you all right?
Hell no, I ain't all right, you asshole!
Well, what's wrong?
I think I broke my damn arm.
The kid finally emerged from the tangled mess.
Oh, woof. That looks like a nasty break.
The kid glanced down at where his left arm hung limply at his side. Between the elbow and the wrist, the arm took a bend that was not at all natural and was swollen to almost twice its size. The kid's face was scratched and bleeding and screwed up in pain, and he just shook his head.
I hope I get my hands on the son of a bitch who was doing all that shooting.
Well, you can hardly blame him none, kid. After all, we started the shooting, and he's just shooting back.
That don't matter none at all. If I ever find out who it was, he's a dead man.
When Hardy moved toward him, his knife extended. The kid slapped at his empty holster with his right hand. And then he looked around wildly for his pistol, which had evidently fallen from his hand when he was somersaulting over his horse's head.
What are you doing with that blade?
Don't worry, kid. I'm not gonna hurt you. I figure we're gonna need you to cut some limbs off that there sycamore bush to make you a splint for that arm. Unless you want to ride back to town with it bouncing and flopping all over the place.
After he cut 4 limbs about 24 inches in length, Hardy turned to the kid, who was sitting on a rock cradling his left arm with his right, his face pale and covered with sweat and dried blood from all the scratches.
Now for the fun part.
What do you mean?
I'm gonna have to set that wrist, kid, or you're gonna have to go the rest of your life with an arm as crooked as a dog's hind leg.
Wait a minute!
Hardy took the kid's arm.
No use fighting it, kid. We done drank all the whiskey while we was waiting to shoot up the train. Now just bite on this and I'll fix you up right. Oh, what a baby.
While the train was stopped at the small platform that served as the Payday station, Cal waited by the old lady's side until someone had fetched a buckboard from the town, and then he climbed in next to her for the trip back to town. Once there, Mayor Sam Hemmings directed the driver of the wagon to park it in front of Dr. Bentley's house. Once the lady was lying on one of the doctor's beds, still unconscious, the mayor got a good look at her.
Well, I'll be damned.
I see you know who she is.
Sure I do. That's Janet Rule, Dr. Bentley's aunt. I was supposed to meet her when the train came in this afternoon so she could give me some information about the doc's murder.
I know. We looked in her bag on the train and found the telegram she sent you with her name on it.
Jesus, what a mess. I just hope she comes around so she can tell me whatever it was she wanted to. Otherwise, your friend is gonna hang.
Speaking of friends, have you seen smoke around this afternoon?
No, but when I went to get my horse out of the stable to come up here to meet the train, Jerry Stone said Smoke got his horse and rode out of town this morning and hasn't come back since.
Damn, isn't there someone in this town who could take that bullet out of her shoulder?
No, I'm afraid not, son. Since we had the doc here for so long, none of us ever had to learn to take bullets out of people.
Crap. Get me a basin of water, boiled and hot, and some towels.
You gonna try to get that lead out of her?
I will if you show me where the doctor kept his instruments. Last time I did this, I did it with a skinning knife heated in a campfire. But the doctor's probably got something better suited for it than that.
You sure you know what you're doing?
No, but I've at least done it a time or two before. And I've seen smoke do it on me 4 or 5 times. You got any better ideas?
We could send someone to Pueblo.
She'd be dead before he gets there, much less before anyone else could get back here. If we gotta do this, it's gotta be done now.
Soon a pan of steaming hot water was placed next to the bed, and Cal had the doc's instruments laid out on a side table next to him. Taking a long, slim knife off the table, he glanced up at Hemmings, who was standing behind him.
If you want to help, you can stand next to her and make sure she don't move.
Hemmings nodded and sleeved sweat off his brow. It was obvious that he'd had no experience with such matters in the past. Cal took the knife in one hand and a pair of slim tongs in the other. He used the tip of the knife to open the wound a bit. Then he probed down deep with the tongs, trying to feel with the metal like it was his fingers. Immediately, blood began to ooze up out of the wound, but since it wasn't spurting, Cal tried to ignore it. After a few moments, he felt a slight click as the tip of the metal tongs touched lead. Spreading the tong tip slowly, he gently pushed deeper, and then he closed them around the butt end of the slug. As easy as he could, he withdrew the tongs, and sure enough, lying there between the tips was a slightly bent and crumpled lead bullet.
Good God Almighty, you did it!
It ain't over yet, Mayor.
Cal took a clean cloth, rolled it into a small cylinder, and dipped it in the hot water. Then after wringing it out, he gently pushed it down into the wound, which was oozing blood a little faster now that he'd stirred things up inside her. Once the flow of blood was stopped, he took a larger piece of cloth and wrapped the cloth around her shoulder in a figure eight, making it tight enough to keep pressure on the wound.
Now it's up to her how bad she wants to live.
Well, at least her color looks a mite better.
Yeah, but I'm worried that she didn't even move when I was probing her. She's still pretty deep asleep, and that ain't exactly a good sign.
Well, at least she's got a chance now, son. Thanks to you.
Cal nodded quickly and moved over to take a seat in a chair next to the wall. He leaned back against the back of the chair, loosened the rawhide thong on his pistol, and laid his head back and closed his eyes.
What are you doing?
This lady's got some information that's going to put some galoot's neck in a noose, Mayor. He's already tried to kill her once, and if he finds out she's alive, it's my guess he's going to try again. I aim to prevent that from happening.
I was planning on asking the sheriff to stand watch over her until she woke up, Cal.
Yeah, that'd be asking the fox to guard the hen house, Mr. Hemmings.
Oh, I don't...
You're welcome to stay here if you want, or have some lady from the town stay here with us. But I'm not leaving this lady's side until she tells us who really killed the doctor.
And what if she says your friend did it?
That ain't gonna happen, Mayor.
And just how are you so sure?
Think about it, Mr. Hemmings. The trial was over and done with, and Pearl had been sentenced to hang. If this lady knew that he was the one who'd done it, why would she come all the way down here and tell you about it? Hell, he was done for. All she had to do was keep her mouth shut, and he was gonna hang.
My God. You're right, Cal.
The next day, Smoke was up at dawn after sleeping only fitfully in the woods near the cabin Sheriff Tolliver and his companion stayed in. Smoke had made a cold camp, not daring to light a fire lest he give his location away. When the sun rose and there was no sign the two men in the cabin were even awake yet, Smoke said to hell with it and made himself a hat-sized fire. He used only small, very dry sticks so there'd be little or no smoke, and he cooked bacon and beans and used the grease to make the rock-hard biscuits in his saddlebag soft enough to eat without the danger of breaking a tooth. By the time Smoke was on his last cup of boiled coffee and his second cigarette of the day, he saw signs of life in the cabin. Tolliver walked out the door and into the old outhouse out back. Smoke used the time to pack up his breakfast fixings, and he was ready to go when Tolliver and his companion finally got onto their horses and headed back to town. After a while, Smoke decided to have some fun. So he walked his horse out of the thick brush alongside the trail and got into a line 100 yards or so behind the sheriff, only keeping pace with the two men and not catching up. to making sure they knew he'd been following them. Other than glancing over his shoulder and grinning a few times, Tolliver didn't look like Smokes being there bothered him at all. Smoke began to wonder if he hadn't been suckered. He wondered if the sheriff hadn't guessed he'd be following him and sent the other two men off to do his dirty work. If that were true, Miss Rule had probably already been sent on to her reward in the afterlife, and he was going to have to find some other way to prove Pearlie's innocence. When they got to town, the sheriff and his fat friend walked their horses straight to the cafe they'd eaten at the previous day. The men had obviously been too lazy to make themselves breakfast, so they were going for an early lunch, Smoke figured. No need to follow him there. He'd do better checking in with the mayor to find out if he'd heard anything from Miss Rule since Smoke had last talked with him. It was about time for Smoke to put his foot down and make the man divulge when and where she was going to show up, so that he and Cal could make sure she lived long enough to testify. When he got to the mayor's office, Smoke found a note tacked to the door saying the mayor was over at Dr. Bentley's house.
Well, that's strange. What would he be doing at a dead man's house?
Smoke tied his horse to the hitching rail out front and knocked on the doctor's door. A haggard-looking mare answered. His hair was askew, his face was unshaven, and his eyes were bleary and bloodshot.
Oh, hello, Mr. Jensen.
He stepped to the side and ushered Smoke in.
Good morning, Mr. Hemmings. You look like the north end of a southbound mule.
Yeah, it comes from staying up all night jumping at every sound because you're sure someone's going to shoot you in the head while you're asleep.
Smoke raised his eyebrows, and he was just about to ask what Hemmings meant when Cal walked into the room.
Hey, Smoke.
Hey, Cal. Now, just what have you two been up to?
Half an hour later, the coffee'd been made and drunk, and the men were standing in the clinic room looking down at Janet Rule.
If she's got a fever, it's very slight. You did a good job getting that slug out of her, Cal. You probably saved her life. There is absolutely no sign of festering or suppuration around the wound.
Yeah, maybe. I just wish she'd wake up and tell us what she knows that might help Pearlie. That way no one would have any reason to kill her and we could relax a little bit.
So you two sat up with her all night?
Yes. Your friend here thought her life might be in danger, so we both elected to guard her during the night.
From what Cal said, the outlaws who attacked the train only fired into the last car. That means they weren't trying to rob the train, and it also means they knew beforehand when Miss Rue was arriving and exactly where she was going to be seated.
Of course. I hadn't thought of that. I was so busy worrying about whether she was going to live or not, I plumb forgot to think about what her attack meant.
Who else besides yourself knew of Miss Rule's plans?
Only myself and Robert Jacobson, the man who took the telegraph message.
Huh. We already know Jacobson's got a big mouth and he's pretty friendly with the sheriff.
What do you think about what Cal found out in Pueblo, Mayor?
It doesn't sound too good for the sheriff. It probably means he's been stealing claims from miners for some time. But it does not necessarily mean that he had anything to do with Dr. Bentley's death. The two things may not be connected, and while it certainly puts him on the hook for a lot of crimes, it won't help clear Pearlie unless the sheriff confesses to the murder of Bentley, too.
You're right, Mayor.
But Smoke, we both know he's guilty as can be.
Knowing it and proving it are two separate things, Cal.
Then, Smoke surprised them both by grinning.
Why have you got that crap-eating grin on your face, Smoke?
Oh. I've got an idea. What was the name of that woman who helped treat Pearlie's wounds? The ex-nurse?
Why, Hattie Monroe.
And you two are, close friends, I take it?
Yes, you could say that. Why?
Do you trust her completely?
I guess so. As far as I know, Hattie is an honorable woman in spite of her profession. But you still haven't answered my question. Why?
I told you. I have an idea.
Jeb Hardy and Kid Akins were riding into town, doubled up on Hardy's mount since Akins' horse had broken his leg in the fall and had to be put down.
Hey, Jeb, isn't that Buck's horse over at the cafe there?
Yeah. You feel up to eating something this afternoon?
I guess so. But I was kind of hoping for something a little stronger to drink than coffee. I need something to ease this pain in my arm. Just about every other bone I got feels like it's been stomped on by a mule.
We'll get to that. Let's see what Buck has to say first, then we'll head on over to the saloon.
Buck raised his eyebrows when he saw Jeb and Akins walk in the door. And then he scooted over to make room for him in the booth where he and Hog Hogarth were sitting.
What the hell happened? I didn't see any commotion when I rode into town like somebody had been killed. Did you get the old lady?
I think so. Put a bunch of rounds into that rail car, and I think I heard her scream just before she dropped out of sight.
What happened to you?
Some asshole in the train started shooting back at us, and he got lucky and plugged my horse.
So you fell off and broke your little arm?
Yeah, but it's not my gun hand, so don't go getting any ideas, fat man.
I don't care if your gun hand's good or not, little man. And I wanted to take you, I'd take your guns, fists, knives, or teeth.
Shut the heck up! I'm trying to get some work done here, and you two keep acting like little kids fighting all the time. So you think you got it done, huh?
I said I think so, Buck. Won't know for sure till we go into town and listen to what everyone's saying. Hell, train ought to have been there by now.
I don't see no crowds around my office, nor anyone gathered in the street. Maybe the train just kept on going and didn't stop to let anybody off since they'd been attacked.
I see you done finished your meal. Why don't you head on over to the mayor's office and see what he heard? We'll wait here for you.
The hell we will! Soon as I finish this grub, I'm heading for the saloon to get me some whiskey to kill the pain.
Cry, baby.
All right. I'll mosey on over to Hemming's office and I'll meet you men at the saloon in half an hour. And for you two's sake, I'd better find out that train pulled into the station with at least one dead body on it.
Mayor Sam Hemmings was sitting in his office going over some paperwork when Sheriff Buck Tolliver walked in. He took his hat off before sitting down, a sign that usually meant he intended to stay and chew the fat for a while.
Howdy, Mayor.
Hello, Buck. Haven't seen you around for a couple of days.
Yeah, well, I had to do my weekly ride around to the mining camps in the county and make sure they weren't having any problems with poachers or claim jumpers.
Well, you sure missed some excitement here while you were gone.
Oh?
A couple of desperados shot up the afternoon train from Pueblo yesterday. Probably just a couple of drunken cowboys, because they didn't try to rob it or anything. Just shot the hell out of one of the cars as it was slowed down coming up that big hill just outside of town.
Is that so? Anybody hurt?
Yes, matter of fact. Ms. Rule. You remember, Dr. Bentley's aunt was shot up.
Oh, I'm awful sorry to hear that. They gonna have a funeral for her here or in Pueblo?
Well, now that's the good news. She wasn't killed, just wounded. That friend of Pearlie's, Cal Woods, happened to be on the train, and he took the bullet out of her, and she looks like she's gonna be all right.
She able to tell you anything about the night Doc got killed?
No, not yet. Unfortunately, she's still unconscious from loss of blood and hasn't been able to tell me anything as of yet. But we expect her to wake up any time now, and as soon as she does, I'm going to go over there and see what she has to say.
Where are you keeping her? I might ought to go on over there and see if I can get a statement from her.
She's over at the doc's house, in that little room where he kept his sick patients when they had to stay overnight. I've got Haddam and Rose staying with her. But she says we ought not bother her for a few more days until she gets her strength back. Hattie said she'll let me know as soon as she wakes up and is ready to talk.
Hattie the only one staying there?
Well, after all, Buck, Miss Rule is a proper lady. We can't hardly have any townsmen staying in the same house with her while she's unconscious. Just wouldn't be right.
Of course, you're right. I wasn't thinking. Besides, the only man who'd have any reason to not want her to tell about that night is already in jail waiting to be hung.
That's right. I suspect that when Ms. Rule wakes up, she's going to tell us that Pearlie killed the doc, and that'll be the end of it.
I'm sure you're right, Mayor. Well, I better be on my way. The good citizens of Payday don't pay me to sit around jawing all day.
See you later, Buck.
Tolliver could hardly keep from running as he made his way straight toward the saloon down the street from the mayor's office. He burst through the bat wings and looked frantically around for his friends. Sure enough, Hog and Jeb and Kid were sitting at a corner table across the room. Tolliver took a seat and without speaking, he grabbed a whiskey bottle and a spare glass and he filled it to the brim.
Bad news, I take it.
Damn straight there's bad news. It seems you and the kid here didn't do too good a job yesterday. In fact, about the only thing you got killed was the kid's horse.
Hey, Buck, I saw the lady go down with my own eyes. I know she was hit.
Yeah, she went down, but not out, you fool. You only managed to wound her. And that damn kid with Jensen was on the train, and he fixed her up good enough that the mayor says she'll be good as new in a few days and talking her full head off.
Did she tell him what she saw the night you, the doc was killed?
Not yet, thank God. But according to Hemmings, it won't be too long before she's able to send us all to the gallows.
Hold on there, Buck. None of us had anything to do with the doc's killing. That was yours and Blackie's mess. Don't be talking no gallows talk to me.
I done told you once, Hardy. It don't make no never mind about who did the doc. If it looks like I'm going to swing from the end of a rope, I can guarantee you I won't be dancing alone.
It's beginning to look like the simplest thing for us to do is to plant you forked end up, Buck. That'd solve all our problems.
Yeah, but my lawyer in Pueblo has all the information he needs to make sure every last one of you sons of bitches will be convicted of dozens of murders, Jeb. So you better get shut of that idea right now.
Hey, fellas! Let's not fight among ourselves! Remember, we all got a good thing going here. There's no need to let a little old lady screw it up for us.
For once, the kid's right, men.
All right, then. Here's what we have to do. The mayor's had the old lady being kept in the doc's house. She's being watched over by Hattie Monroe, and there's no other guards.
Then there should be no problem sneaking in there tonight and putting a lead pill in both their heads.
Hold on, Jeb. It would raise a lot of questions if they're killed like that. People might start to wonder who has something to hide.
Well, then, Buck, just what do you want us to do? Take her out to the cabin and hold her until she dies of old age?
No, I just need someone to slip into the house without being seen, cut their throats, and then set the house on fire.
But people will still know they've been killed, won't they?
No, they won't, Hog. The fire will destroy the bodies, so no one will know their throats were cut. Everyone knows Hattie smokes like a chimney. They'll just assume she fell asleep and set the place on fire. Matter of fact, it might be a good idea to take an empty bottle of whiskey and lay it next to her body like she'd been drinking all night and passed out while smoking a cigarette.
Who do you want to do the job?
Not you, kid. I think Hog's the best one here with a blade, so he should do it.
Yeah, and even he ought to be able to kill a couple of women and start a fire without messing it up too bad. Unless he's too drunk to walk by then.
I ain't drunk, kid, but I tell you what I am gonna do. And that's start a fire under your ass when I get done with them two ladies.
The men were all so intent on their discussion, they didn't see Smoke Jensen and Joshua Banks standing on the second floor landing, watching them cold-bloodedly plan the murder of two women. Scudding clouds raced across the night sky and blotted out the moon, making the main street of Payday as dark as the inside of a black cat at midnight. A heavy-set rotund figure moved from the alleyway just south of the late Dr. Bentley's office. He moved slowly along the boardwalk with his back pressed up against the buildings. Hog Hogarth felt as if his heart was gonna hammer itself right out of his damn chest. He didn't take what slitting the throat of someone who wasn't awake to possibly have a chance to fight back. As big as he was, Hog had never been a bully. He'd never had to be. And all the time he was growing up, his daddy had preached to him that he should never hit anyone smaller than him. This posed somewhat of a dilemma for Hog, as just about everybody in town when he was growing up was smaller than him. He'd solved his problem by never fighting anyone his size or smaller with two hands. He'd just licked them all one-handed and been done with it. Now, however, he was being asked to kill not only a woman, but a woman who was asleep at the time. That was sticking in Hog's craw, and he didn't know how he was going to deal with it. And he wouldn't know it until the very moment the knife was in his hand and he was standing over the lady. When he was halfway across the last street between him and the doctor's office, the moon came out from behind the clouds and exposed Hog in full moonlight, standing almost on the doctor's porch.
Damn!
Hog ran up onto the doctor's porch. He reached out and tried the doorknob. It was locked. But that was no problem for him. He stuck the empty whiskey bottle he was carrying under his arm, pulled out a thin-bladed stiletto, and inserted the point between the door and the jamb. Hog withdrew a large bladed Bowie-type knife from the scabbard on his belt, enjoying its heavier weight and more substantial feel than the stiletto. holding the knife in one hand, Hogg reached down, slipped his boots off, left him on the porch. He would be as quiet as a mouse pissing on cotton as he tiptoed into the darkness of the parlor. Stood there for a moment in the dark, letting his eyes adjust to the gloomy atmosphere. Off to his right, he could see light coming from under the door of the doctor's clinic room. Holding the knife out in front of him, he shuffled his feet along the floor so as not to make any boards creak as he moved toward the light. As he eased the door to the clinic room open, he vowed to try to wake Miss Rule up before he cut her throat. He'd look into her eyes and give her a chance to try to fight him off. It wouldn't do her any good, but it might salve his conscience a little bit anyway. He peered around the edge of the door and saw a woman sitting in a rocker with her back to the door, her long blonde hair hanging down her back. She had her hands in front of her, and it looked like she was knitting to pass the time. On the bed in front of her, turned so her back was to the room, was the sleeping form of a white-haired lady. The covers were pulled up to her ears so he couldn't see her face. But how many grannies could be there lying in the doctor's old house? Slowly, he crept toward the woman in the rocking chair. And as he neared her, he reached out and grabbed the hair and yanked it toward him. He fell back and stumbled and almost went down on one knee when the hair came right off in his hand. But then he glanced at the rocking chair and saw Smoke Jensen turn around and grin at him. The mountain man was wearing a shawl over his buckskins and had a Colt 45 in his hand. And the hole in the end of the barrel that was pointed at Hogg's head looked big enough to fall into. The woman on the bed stirred. And Hogg saw the young man who was riding with Jensen take his white wig off and sit up in the bed.
Good thing it didn't take him much longer to get here. I was about to fall asleep right here in the bed.
You want to drop that bowie knife, Hogg? Or do you want me to shoot it out of your hand?
Hogg hesitated, trying to figure his chances of throwing the knife before Jensen could get around off.
Of course, it's kind of dark in here, and I might miss the knife and blow a couple of your fingers off instead. And they'll be calling you Lefty in the state prison for the next 20 years if you manage not to get hanged.
Hogg blinked. He was hardly able to follow the humor in Smoke's comment, but he did hear blow your fingers off. And that convinced him to drop the knife and raise his hands in the air.
What do you mean, hanged? Well, I saw the light in the window and I knew the doc was dead and I thought I'd make sure nobody was trying to rob his place.
That's a good one, Hogg. Do you think that up all by yourself?
What do you mean?
Well, I thought since we have witnesses to you and Sheriff Buck Tolliver and your other friend cooking up this little assassination attempt, they might have helped you with the little story about you just being a civic-minded citizen worrying about a dead man's property.
No, Jensen. For your information, I thought that up all by myself. Did nobody help me at all?
Hogg was still smiling when Mayor Hemmings and the lawyer Joshua Banks walked into the room.
I heard that, Smoke. And if I have to, I'll testify in court that Mr. Hogarth freely admitted he was lying about just checking out the place.
Hogg's grin faded and he hung his head, shaking it slowly. He was thinking his daddy had been right all along. He was as dumb as a stump.
All right, so what do we do now?
Well, we got one of the rats in our trap. Now it's time to see if we can't entice the rest of them to join him.
Smoke put his pistol in his holster and bent over to pick up the knife Hogg had dropped on the floor. As he lowered his head, he heard Hogg charge. Smoke found himself wrapped inside Hogg's meaty arms in a bear hug's death grip. Out of the corner of his eye, Smoke saw Cal's pistol being aimed at the back of Hogg's head.
No, no, I'll handle this.
Smoke flexed his own considerable muscles and slowly moved his arms out away from his body, breaking Hogg's grip and causing the big man to stumble backward a step or two.
That was a pretty good shot, Hogg. You want to dance some more while I'm ready for you? Or you're just good at surprising a man who's not looking?
Sure. I'll go a couple turns around the dance floor with you, Jensen. But you won't like the ending.
Ha ha!
Come on and show me what you got.
Jumping, Jesus. I don't think I've ever seen anyone hit so hard in my entire life. You lifted his feet plumb off the ground when you connected with his chin.
I usually take the time to put on padded gloves before hitting someone like that. It's tough on the knuckles otherwise.
Damn, I hope you didn't kill him.
Oh, he'll live. But he's gonna have a hell of a headache when he wakes up.
How are we gonna get his carcass to the jail? He looks like he weighs 300 pounds.
Who said we're taking him to jail? I don't think there's any need to let the sheriff know we have Mr. Hogarth in custody. It'll be more fun to see what he does when Hog doesn't return to the saloon to tell him his mission was accomplished.
Yeah. Let the dirty bastards wonder what happened when he doesn't show up.
It might just be that they'll come looking for their lost friend.
Which will seal their fate for once and for all.
Let's roll Hog's fat butt under the empty bed over there, and then you can get back into this one, Cal.
Sheriff Buck Tolliver looked at the big regulator clock on the wall of his office for at least the 100th time since they'd sent Hog off to kill the Rule Woman and Hattie Monroe. It had been an hour and a half since Hog had snuck out the back door of the jail and disappeared into the night to do his dirty work.
I'm telling you, Buck, something's gone wrong. Even as slow as that fat-ass Hog is, he's had plenty of time to get into that doc's office and kill those two ladies.
I'm afraid he's right, Buck.
But there's been no alarm raised. No one's called for the sheriff, and there's been no shots fired, so maybe he just got lost or passed out drunk or something.
Well, as dumb as Hog is, I guess anything's possible. But one thing we do know for sure is there ain't no fire at the doc's house.
Do you think he could have killed him and forgot to light a fire? Maybe that's it. Maybe he just forgot. Or the fire went out or something. And he's over at the saloon getting pissed drunk while we sit here worrying our fool heads off.
If he is, then he's a dead man, because I'm going to kill him with my bare hands.
Like you said, Buck, the good news is there hasn't been any alarm raised. If Hog had screwed up and gotten caught, then I'd expect the street to be full of men hell-bent on finding out what's going on. But it's quiet as a church on Monday out there.
I'll tell you what, man. You do go on over to the saloon and see if Hog is there. If he is, keep him there. Make sure he don't get so drunk he shoots his mouth off.
What are you gonna be doing?
Like you always said, Jeb, I started this mess, so I guess it's up to me to finish it. If Hog didn't kill the women, then I'm going to. I'll start the fire and then hightail it to the saloon. By the time somebody reports it, you two can say I was there with you all the time.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Buck, but if you ain't at that saloon in half an hour, I'm gonna get on my horse and ride like hell to Pueblo and hope I can get my money out of the bank before the marshals come looking for me.
What? You think this is all some kind of trap set to catch us and make us admit what we did?
I don't know what it is, Buck, but something ain't right. I can smell it.
Hell, Jeb, Jensen ain't that smart. He's a washed-up old gunslick, that's all.
You can laugh at me when you show up at the saloon and the fire's eating that building down, Buck. Until then, I'm keeping my options open.
15 minutes later, Tolliver was easing into the back of the doc's house, his gun in one hand and a skinning knife in the other. He could see the light from a lantern turned down low under the door to the patient's room, so he made his way quietly through the darkness, his eyes looking back and forth for movement in case this was a trap. When he got to the door, he used his knife hand to ease it open a couple of inches, and he peeked through the slit. Sure enough, there was Hattie with her hair hanging down and her head slumped to the side in a rocking chair in front of the bed where she'd fallen asleep. Janet Rule's gray hair was sticking out from under the covers on the bed in front of Hattie. This was perfect. He didn't know where Hog was or why he hadn't done the damn job, but he was damn sure gonna do it himself, and right now. He holstered his pistol and held the knife out in front of him as he moved across the room. His heart almost stopped when Hattie stirred and turned around in her chair. Suddenly, he was staring into the pale eyes of Smoke Jensen and the dark hole of Jensen's .45 Peacemaker.
Good evening, Sheriff.
Cal sat up in bed and grinned at him from under a gray wig.
Howdy, Buck.
Tolliver's mouth hung open as Mayor Sam Hemmings and Joshua Banks stepped out into the light from behind an armoire against the far wall. Hemmings just shook his head sadly.
Why, Buck? Why did you do all this?
Why, Mayor? You ask me why? Robbing the miners was for the money, of course. You can't get rich off $100 a month, Mayor. The doc was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, like I told him before I shot him. I hated that, because I really liked him. But Blackie screwed up. He was supposed to kill Jensen's friend, and then when Jensen came back to town, I was going to kill him.
Why, Tolliver? What did I ever do to you to make you want to hurt me?
You remember a man named Jack Tolliver?
No, I don't.
You and your preacher friend shot him down in cold blood 20 years ago. Him and four of his friends. It was right after you'd had a fight in a bar. They came out shooting and you and your friend killed every one of them.
You were the kid who shot me. The one with the peppermint stick in his mouth.
Yeah. Jack was my big brother and I watched you shoot him down like a dog in the street.
He didn't give me a choice, Tolliver. You had to know that.
It didn't matter then and it doesn't matter now. You took him from me and I wanted you to pay for that with your life.
Before Smoke could answer, Hogg rose up from behind the bed, the stiletto from his pocket in his hand. He grabbed Hemmings from behind and stuck the knife against his neck. Smoke raised his pistol, but he didn't fire, for fear of hitting the mayor in the low light of the room.
Quick, Buck, let's hightail it out of here.
As quick as a flash, Buck ran out of the room, with Hogg stumbling along behind him, dragging the mayor with him. When he got to the doctor's back door, Hogg shoved the mare inside and slammed it. Then he turned and ran as fast as he could after Tolliver toward the saloon down the street. By the time Smoke and Cal and Banks picked the mare up and got out the door, they could just see Hogg and Tolliver entering the saloon. As they ran toward it, men and women began streaming out of the back wings. Smoke slowed to a walk.
Looks like they're going to hold up in the saloon and wait for us to come in after them.
Hell with that. I'm a lawyer, not a lawman. I'm not going in there and getting myself shot.
I'm not a gunman, Smoke. I don't even carry a pistol.
I tell you what, Mayor. You go let my friend Pearly out of jail. Give him his gun, and we'll clean up your town for you.
As he finished talking, the lights in the saloon went out, leaving the place as dark as a tomb.
All right, Smoke. I'll do it right away.
You might want to send him out with an express gun and some shells too, Mayor.
Getting to be quite the expert at storming buildings, huh?
Yeah, it's the company I keep, I guess. I was taught by an expert.
Half an hour later, Pearly and Cal and Smoke stood outside the saloon and discussed their options.
We could just burn the place down.
I've never held much with burning men alive. It shows no respect for your opponent.
You think Tolliver deserves our respect after all he did?
I remember a boy no more than 10 or 12. So small it took both his hands to ear back the hammer on a Colt. He stood there in that street with his brother and all his brother's friends dead all around him. And he tried to shoot me down while still sucking on a peppermint stick. His brother had just been killed. And he was man enough even at that age to try to do something about it. So yes, he does deserve our respect. If not for the man he came to be, then for the boy he once was.
So, how you want to handle it?
Let's give him another chance to be that brave little boy.
Smoke walked up the street until he was standing in front of the saloon, well within pistol range if they tried to shoot from inside.
Tolliver! Buck Tolliver!
Yeah? What do you want, Jensen?
None of you can get away, Tolliver. You've got two choices. You can stay in that saloon until the marshals get here and root you out to die at the end of a rope. Or you can come out here and face me and my friends in the street. There are horses tied up out here. If you get by us, there's no one else to stop you from getting on those broncs and heading into the mountains. Who knows? You might even get away clean. It's your choice, Tolliver. Stay and die for certain, or come out here and take a chance on living. Either way, a bullet is better than a long fall on a short rope.
Seconds later, four men walked out of the saloon side by side. Three of the men had pistols on their belts, and the fourth was carrying a short-barreled express gun cradled in his arms.
Jensen, this is for my brother Jack.
Smoke nodded, and all of the men went for their guns. Jeb Hardy's eyes opened wide in surprise as he saw all three of the men in front of him draw and fire while his gun was barely out of its holster. Kid Akins never even cleared leather before two slugs knocked him backward to land spread-eagled on his back, staring up at the stars in the night sky.
I'll be damned. My arm don't hurt no more.
Hog Hogarth got off both barrels of his express gun, firing from the hip without aiming before he was hit and hit hard. Tolliver surprised himself by drawing and getting off one quick shot at Jensen. Jensen's slug took him in the chest and belly. Moments later, he felt himself being turned over, and he looked up into the face of Smoke Jensen. He looked down and saw a red stain on Jensen's shoulder, and he grinned.
Oh, got you in the wing again, huh?
Yeah, and as I recall, it's the same arm, Buck.
I got no right to ask, Jensen. But I need a favor.
Yeah?
Take the money I got in the banks in Pueblo and have my body sent to Homestead, Colorado. There's a little cemetery there with all my family in it. Plant me there, Jensen, next to my brother, will you?
I promise, Buck.
So long, though, man. I gave it a good try, but I came up short. Oh.
Smoke stood up and turned, his heart aching when he saw Cal slip to his knees, the front of his shirt covered with blood.
Damn, I am so tired of getting shot all the time.
Smoke quickly ripped Cal's shirt open and saw four holes in Cal's chest and stomach oozing blood. Just under the skin, less than half an inch deep, he could see the outline of buckshot from the express gun Hog had fired. Smoke was relieved to know Cal's wounds weren't life-threatening.
I told you, Smoke. Boy's a lead magnet. Happens every time we get in a gunfight. Bullets just automatically head for old Cal.
Cal looked up and saw the blood on Smoke's shoulder.
I'll take yours out if you'll take mine out.
Since I've heard you've been getting plenty of practice lately, it's a deal.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 32, Wrath of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2004, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Christopher Graybill, Drew Kopis, Tim Getman, Christopher Sheeran, and Joe Brack. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and the Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Wrath of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
But with this much blaster fire and fresh blood in the air, you can bet your ass we'll soon have lots of company.
Maybe even some of those big Wendy's we've heard about that have invaded the desert from the far north.
Wendigos. They were just a myth in my time, but they're sure as hell real enough now.
Gaia, it's a bioweapon!
Hammer the bastard!
Fuck. Poisoned. The whole bastard lake was poisoned! Slavers. Nuking hell. The weapons are gone. If these fat fools had our rapid fires, they would have used them in the fight. Somebody else has our shit now. Just tell us where to find your son. He lives, you live, everybody wins. That's good biz. Deal?
No deal. Outlanders.
Oh, shit. What we do now?
First, we wreck this place to make sure it's empty. Next, we loot this place to the walls. Then we find that vill Big Joe mentioned and start hunting for the Pig Iron Gang.
I can read it. I cracked their code. Greetings. My name is Mildred Wyatt. I am a physician and was cryogenically frozen in December 2000.
This is written by somebody who was frozen? A Freezy?
Blind NORAD, and we left her by the waterfall for Big Joe to sell to the slavers. A pre-dark healer. Ah, we could have gotten anything we wanted from a Baron for her. Any nukin' thing we wanted.
Does the book tell the location of her cryo-whatever unit? That must have been where she got that implode granting those fancy blasters.
Not yet, but there's a map in the back of a place looks like a bomb shelter. A huge one, 5 stories deep, maybe more.
What do you think we'd find in that bomb shelter?
Our future. Bomb shelter, my ass. This is more like a pre-dark mill base.
Give us back our blasters and shit, and we'll let you walk out of here alive.
Come take it yourself.
Deathlands 98, Tainted Cascade. Available in graphic audio. Available now in graphic audio. The war between Dante Valentine and the devil has been building.
Hey, Blondie, you two-faced lying sack of demon shit. You've got business with me first.
Indeed, I do!
Now, all will be settled in one epic final confrontation.
Here I stand, Lucifer, and not all the hosts of hell shall move me.
Not all the hosts of hell are necessary, Necromans.
Just one.
Dante Valentine number 5, To Hell and Back. The thrilling conclusion to the Dante Valentine series.
There is more than one way to break a human.
Rogue Angel 28, Restless Soul.
War is always the same. It is young men dying in the fullness of their promise. It is trying to kill a man that you do not even know well enough to hate. Therefore, to know war is to know that there is still madness in this world.
Madness! Madness! Hold on!
They will kill us!
Shut up!
We will die! We will die!
Everyone dies, but I won't let us die today.
Underground rivers in these mountains. Maybe they are rising because God needs to wash away still more dirt.
Free me!
Free me!
Up! This is flooding! Anya, Sakharat, come on, move!
Luke, did you hear?
Anya, now! We have to get out of here!
Since you intend to kill me anyway, why not tell me what this is all about? Where did all of the gold come from?
And where is it going?
Yes.
I told you I was educated in America. I grew up on James Bond films. All the villains reveal their plans, lording it over James Bond, who was trussed up to some torture device. He always escaped.
You worry that I'll escape? You've got a gun on me.
I am not a James Bond villain. I am not a villain at all. Just a businessman, an opportunist, who made fortunate alliances so he could make a fortune. I do not need to explain my plans to an archaeologist who stars in a silly television program, and no, I do not worry that you will escape. Now tell me, Anya Creed, where did you go yesterday? Who did you talk to? And where is Lou Ardo?
He's beyond your reach.
God damn you! Where is Lou Ardo? Who have you told about this place? I'll let you live if you cooperate, Anya Creed.
I give up.
No!
Don't shoot anyone! It's me you want!
Dear God, no!
In graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.